Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. My guest this episode, Simona DiSilvestro. Really enjoyed covering her career here in North America, coming up through the Atlantic Series, then into IndyCar, where she was a genuine badass driving for smaller teams, worked her way all the way up to a midfield team, and had a couple of appearances with Andretti Autosport, admittedly while they and the Honda teams were struggling with the new manufacturer aero kit back in 2015, but it's been a little while since she and I have had a chance to catch up, maybe a text or an email here or there over the past couple of years. Since she moved to Australia to become a full-time Australian supercars driver, things have gone okay there. Haven't been as strong as she would hoped or her fans would have hoped, so spoke about that, about the transition, something completely brand new for her. Also keep in mind that within the last 2 or 3 years, her career has been pointing in many directions without reaching full destinations in every instance. You think about the fact that she did have that effort to prepare herself for Formula One with the Sauber team. That went sideways for reasons that really were not of her making. We also have a bit of time in Formula E as well, and then finally landing in the formerly known V8 Supercars Championship. And so with all that together, really just got into what the last couple of years have been like for her, some of the struggles, some of the things that she's hoping to improve upon, some of the new things she's hoping to accomplish. We obviously have the, hey, would you like to come back to IndyCar question that a couple of folks asked me to pose, and a few other items, some good questions that came in too. So had about half hour, 35 minutes with her, actually traveling from down under, home to Switzerland for a break before, I believe, one of the last V8 rounds. So good catching up with her, and really look forward to seeing Simona in January at Daytona, where we can do some more catching up in person. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, also Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, plenty of aggregators, and I post everything the moment that it goes up on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. All right, let's get going with a conversation with Simona DiSilvestro, presented by Cooper Tires.
Long time no see.
I know. This is strange.
Too long.
Let's start with this. Sim, I know that at least here in North America, boy, we sure loved having you here. And I know a lot of folks think of the Simona DiSilvestro show in IndyCar, but I remember watching you kick a lot of ass in Atlantics before that. So we had you for a long time. We lost you here, I think folks were really happy to hear we're going to get you back at least early in 2019 for some endurance racing. Just tell me about how that came together with Mike Shank and Jackie Heinricher and such, and what you're anticipating with this return to America.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, to be honest, because, like you said, it's been a long time. You know, I spent pretty much most of my career in America. Just really, that's who I grew as a race car driver. So it's cool to come back. And how it kind of happened, it was definitely, I think it was Kat actually called me. And I asked if I would be interested in doing something in IMSA. And then I was quite interested, especially with Meyer Shank Racing. You know, they're a really good team, and she was she's doing really well with the team. So it was something to think about. And then at the time, I wasn't really sure exactly how it was going to pan out and stuff like that, and how the whole thing is going to come together. And then we got on the phone with Jackie and Bia, and then we kind of had the big picture, and it's definitely super exciting. And I'm really looking forward to it, and especially starting at Daytona, it's gonna be cool for me. You know, it's I've been lucky enough to have driven so many racetracks, so many cool places, like Indy 500, Bathurst, and stuff like that. So Daytona is just kind of one more on the list, and I think we have a really good shot at it. So I'm looking forward to it.
So there was some interesting timing with the announcement of that release with Jackie and the MSR team here in IMSA. I think it came within a day of when the W Series announcement came out. And I know you've spoken about this a lot, so I don't want to ask you to wander down the same path. But I did just find it interesting knowing that during your entire time here in open wheel racing, you were just respected as a badass racer. And you were always straightforward in saying, look, if you guys want to get into the whole gender thing, okay, but that's not what I'm thinking about when I climb into a car. Did you at least appreciate the fact that while the whole Women's W Series announcement came out
and I think got a lot of harsh pushback from most places. Right after it, we had a great announcement of four women racing together at Daytona, all very accomplished, and it was just a purity. It was just purity. Four qualified, quality drivers going to do something positive, period. Nothing more.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the biggest thing, you know, also, I think, why I'm doing it. You know, like, I know Kat and I know Bia, and they're all really strong, you know. I know they're really competitive. You know, Bia was winning Indy Lights races when I was doing Atlantics, and Kat, you know, was already driving in Champ Car, and she was really competitive. So, you know, if really, you know, to do this, it was really going to be only with these people. So, and I think it's the cool way to do it. And also, you know, having Michael Schenk, who is really a top team in that series, to give us a car that is going to be competitive, I think it's really exciting. At the same time, you know, I do feel a bit of pressure because, you know, it is really a good opportunity to show how it's done. And I really hope we have a kind of a smooth race during the 24 hours and hopefully, you know, end up, you know, really well. And I think if that goes really well, you know, hopefully it's going to open a bit more eyes to other people in other series as well, you know, that sometimes you know give a shot and do a proper thing, and you know, really good things can happen.
So your the modern evolution of your career has taken you down under with the Australian Supercar Series. It's been interesting seeing you work your way in there, looking at some of the news for next year, for example, that obviously with Nissan pulling out, the Kelly team still wanting to reserve your services and such. Let's just talk about this move to Tin Tops, V8 powered Tin Tops. Has that become something that is, I don't know if I want to say second nature to you, but it was very new to you when you chose that path. Has it become more comfortable or something that you feel is just you're plugged right into, or is that still an evolution?
No, I think we're there now, but yeah, it definitely, I think now it feels like a race car, you know. And the first time I got in the car, coming from Indy cars, coming from, you know, big cars with like a lot of downforce, it was a really big eye opener. And to be honest, I think the first year was really frustrating. Even this year was a bit frustrating because it's really difficult to, you know, I think as a racing driver, every year you just learn something about you, what you like in a race car, you know. And if you're an open wheel, you just always on top of things, learn every year, every time you go out, you learn something more. And then when I got to IndyCar, I kind of knew how I needed my car to feel to be really quick, because I learned that in all the junior series. And yeah. When I got into the supercars, it was pretty much, I had no clue how that car is supposed to feel. Yeah. So it really throws you off, to be honest. And I think that, you know, the championship as well is super competitive. I think it's definitely, I think, the most competitive championship I've been in. You know, there's sometimes 1/10 of a second, there's like 4 to 6 cars. And it just shows, you know, you really got to be on top of things. And it makes it really hard because I think if you're new and you're not quite sure exactly how the car is supposed to feel, so you're most of the time just working on yourself, how the inputs you're putting in the race car. And then, you know, once you figure that out, you start working on the car. So you're kind of way behind the whole first year at every race weekend. But I think now it feels pretty good. You know, I think I feel really comfortable in the car and the race. We have really good pace, and qualifying is still something that we need to work on a little bit, just getting everything together. But yeah, it was definitely a big adjustment, and yeah, big eye-opener, because you just I think more with yourself, it gets pretty frustrating as a driver sometimes, because you're working, and it's not really going the way you want, and you're just waiting for the click. But I think it's starting to get there, and yeah, I think we're on the right way for sure.
So you've also had another challenge or two in that of the manufacturers in the series. Nissan has, I guess there was a lot of fanfare and hope that program went from its announcement to its upcoming end here would be more successful than it has been. Any thoughts as to, I guess, where the timeline of your coming to the series, having to learn all new tracks, learn a brand new car, and do it with a manufacturer who, again, has been trying hard and has some quality teams, but has not been a steady presence to knock down a Holden or a Ford. It just seems like you've never shied away from challenges, Simona. It just seems like you definitely accepted a bigger one here, which might not have given you the fast lane to podiums and wins all the time.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's been challenging, but you know, I think the biggest thing, you know, it is the decision kind of I took, and you know, I think it's always hard as well when you don't know a series. You know, you also, you know, for example, just engineering, for example, you know, I think in IndyCars in Atlantics, I'd worked with so many different engineers that when I was successful in IndyCar, I actually had an engineer that I worked with in Atlantics. So, you know, it's a big, like, puzzle that has to come together. And coming to Australia, you know, you don't know anybody. You don't know the teams. You just see from results or what's happening and stuff, like, just from the outside. And once you're on the inside, you definitely see a bit more. But, you know, to be honest, I think, I've been 2 years there now. And even in a different car, you know, I think it would have been, the first year would have been really challenging, just how it is, because these cars are quite different to drive, and you just really need to know how to drive them and the tracks as well, and how the races are. And yeah, it's been challenging, but you know, I think we're right there on pace now with our teammates, and you know, we never know what happens in the future, but you know, I think for next year, for sure, the goal is to be the fastest of the Nissans or within Kelly Racing, and then you know, see what happens. So that's a really the big goal I'm kind of putting in my head to be the fastest one of us.
So, thinking back to your IndyCar career, there was one nickname which came out, or which someone coined after you were upside down and on fire at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, got out of the car, had burns. Everyone would have expected, if you'd said, okay, all right, hey, I'll see you guys next year, no one would have said anything negative. But no, being a badass race car driver, you said, I'm going to fight through the pain and do this. So that Iron Maiden name and respect, thinking back to your time in IndyCar and social media, even, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, still had its uglier sides. I just don't remember seeing a lot of it attached to folks saying things about you. It was, by and large, a lot of respect. Then I go and read some of the comments and whatnot from down under, and I'll tell you, if you think we have some really nasty folks here in North America, trust me, there are no borders. There are some hostile folks who have said all kinds of things. You're only there because you're a woman and this, that, and the other. Give us a little bit of context, Simona, of maybe leaving North America and, I think for the most part, feeling a lot of warmth and support from your fans to, I'm guessing, you know, you're not blind, seeing or feeling some of the negativity written about you and such in this new endeavor. How do you manage that?
Yeah, definitely. I think the keyboard warriors are a bit a bit more aggressive down there. But you're right. You know, I think in my career, there's never really been that much negative around me, and I think there's been a bit more since I moved down to supercars. But I think the biggest difference is, you know, I think in America, you know, I kind of almost grew up there as a driver. You know, I was in Atlantics, I was winning races there, so I think, you know, kind of saw me a bit, you know, up and coming through the ranks, and then, you know, ended up in IndyCars, and even we had some pretty good pace here and there. You know, we had a podium in my last year and stuff like that, so I think it's just because I had a longer journey, where I think in supercars, you know, I think the big difference as well, you know, I'm the only international driver there, you know, so as well. So it's really this Australian series, you know, there's only Kiwis and Australians. they are racing, and then you have somebody like completely new where maybe they haven't even really seen what I've done in the past or anything like that, and showing up there. And for sure, you know, the first year was a tough one. You know, we weren't really really that competitive, and you know, the results aren't weren't really there. So I think that's the biggest thing. But you know, I guess, you know, that gives you a bit more fire to show them wrong, you know. So that's why I work hard to prove that it's not the case. So hopefully we'll get there.
And let's look at the other angle of that, Simona. Having seen you and seen how folks reacted to you, whether it's little girls, little boys, adults here in open wheel, you're a naturally warm and, you know, positive person, and it seems like folks really responded to that. I can't recall a lot of Simona Di Silvestro haters here in North America. It seems like you just had a lot of folks who really enjoyed you. What's it been like for you with the racing fans in public, whether it's an autograph session or just walking around? What reaction do you get from folks in real time?
Yeah, actually, like, exactly the same. Like you said, in America, you know, everybody's actually, who's there is really supportive. So it just shows, you know, with social media and stuff like that, there's people who have just different personalities when they're behind the screen and don't have to face it. So, you know, it's super good. You know, it's been really exciting, I think, in Australia as well, you know, because I am the first female driver there in the series. So there's just so many young girls and even young boys coming up and kind of, hey, you know, how cool it is to see you race in here and stuff like that. And I think that's really cool. But, you know, and I try to, you know, be all kind of smiley and things about it. But like on the inside, I know, you know, I can be better. So, you know, it gives me just a lot of kind of win to really get it done. And you know, at the moment I have one more year, so I need to get it done, you know. That's a bit in my head to really show, you know, that that really anything is possible, and just kind of go for it, and that's what's important. So I think it's cool, you know, but yeah, there's still that one piece missing, is the results in supercars for sure.
So 5 years ago when you were here full-time, you were also very committed to STEM and STEM education and trying to just, whether it's meet or inspire the next generation to pursue educations in science, something technical, something that might be related back to motor racing at some point. Have you been able to continue that at all in Australia during your time?
Yeah, I have actually. Like, especially with the Dare to be Different program, what Susie Wolf created, they're doing a really good job with it. So I think we've done a workshop a couple of weeks ago where there was at least like 30, 40 girls coming to a race shop, and we got them on a simulator. We got them to do pit stop challenge.
Oh, how cool!
All kinds of stuff, like, yeah, you know, with engineers, media training and all that. So it was quite a lot of fun. And actually the funniest thing I think that was is when you asked him what was the coolest part was actually the pit stop thing. So it just shows, you know, it's like almost all the girls were like, you know, the best part was changing the wheel on a go-kart. So it just shows that, you know, just doing stuff and, you know, seeing the result when you're doing stuff, you know, I think it is important. I think for any kid, yeah, girl or boy, it just, you know, it just shows that just open the doors and see what the kids want to do and have fun at.
Stereotypes suck. That is so awesome to hear. Well, I told some of our listeners that we'd be catching up for the first time in a while, and it's funny, so many of them have asked me to ask you a lot of the same questions. The first one is IndyCar, and do you have a goal if the door were to open for you to come back? I mean, obviously you were part-time part of the Andretti family in 2015, but any thoughts on, you know, a few years down the road, if either the door opened or if you said I've had my fun in the supercar series, I'm going to go back to North America and see if I can make that happen for myself again?
Well, I think it's difficult, you know. It's like IndyCar is a like super special place in my heart, and for sure, you know, I love those cars, and I know that I'm good in those cars, and I think, yeah, if the right opportunity comes, it's something really to consider. Yes, I would do that, but we all know how racing works, and it's just difficult, you know. At the end of the day, you need sponsorship, you need people really behind you, and at the moment, like, I'm in a really good position in Australia with this, and I'm really enjoying the racing there. So, you know, at the moment, the focus is really to stay in supercars. But yeah, you never know what happens. You know, a couple of years ago, I would have never thought that we'd be racing in Australia. So you never know what can happen. Yeah.
Have you had a chance to follow along in recent years? I know, you obviously got a chance to race the previous generation Dallara. You had a chance to race the current generation Dallara, but IndyCar went to the much prettier Universal Aero kit in 2018, which folks seem to love. Curious you had a chance to just keep up with some of the races, even though there's crazy time differences involved, but either keep up watching some of the races or keep in touch with some of your mates who continue to race here.
Yeah, no, for sure. I always keep an eye on it. You know, I'm a race car driver, so pretty much when there's some kind of racing on TV or something, I'll watch it. And for sure, IndyCar, you know, I just really love it. And you know, I see Michael sometimes in Australia, so I will ask him a lot about how the team is going over there and stuff like that. But yeah, I always try to look into it. And I've been a bit frustrated the last 2 years that somehow we have a race during Indy qualifying or something like that. So, you know, if I get a chance to do Indy, it'd be great. But with the schedule we have at the moment, it's just not possible.
So looking at your career patch between IndyCar, between supercars, you had some interesting things going on. I know we spoke somewhat frequently when you were doing your best to get into Formula One, when the when plans were in motion to try and do something with Sauber, visits to Maranello and some cool testing there and such. Can you tell us a little bit about that effort to get into Formula One now that you've had a few years of distance between it, even down to the physical transformation you had to go through, knowing that strength and muscles were needed in IndyCar, and they're telling you straight away, no, we get rid of all that, we need you to be as small as possible. I'm guessing that experience must have been pretty heavy for you in general.
Yeah, it was an interesting time for sure. You know, I think as a kid, I always dreamed about getting to Formula One. That was always my goal, and I really wanted to focus on that. And finally, the chance was here to jump in one of those cars. And I think training wise, it was quite a little bit different for sure. You know, with power steering and all that, it was quite easy to drive on the arms, but the neck, it was definitely a different story. So I trained that a lot, and it was but you know, I think the IndyCar is the hardest car I've ever had to drive, in the sense, you know, just with how heavy the wheel was, and you do still have like a lot of g-force, you don't really have tire degradation and stuff. So I think as my body was like, you know, pretty used to that, it was pretty easy to just kind of change it up a bit, you know, to suit the Formula One car. And it was an interesting time. You know, it was just a dream come true to drive one of those things. And it was we were very close to maybe something happen, but you know, at the end of the day, it's always a lot about money and a lot about the right relationship. So unfortunately, it didn't pan out. But it's cool that I got to drive a Formula One car. But in hindsight, maybe you should have stayed in IndyCar. I don't know. It's always difficult, but sure. You know, it's just tricky because you're just so dependent on sponsorship around you.
And I thought there might have been something there as well, Simone. I mean, a Swiss driver hoping to drive for Swiss Formula One team. I mean, that's you couldn't.
Yeah,
ask
you
for
would think it makes sense, right?
Well, you couldn't ask for a better scenario to try and happen, but at least knowing a little bit of the inside stuff that went on, and I won't, you know, open that up too much here, but thinking about what you'd done previously in motor racing, I didn't get much of a sense that you were being used or manipulated, or people with agendas were really trying to push or pull you in different directions. It seemed like shortly after this effort to try and prepare you for Formula One moved forward, did you get the sense, did you get the feeling like, huh, this might not be as simple and clean and pure as I'd hoped? It seems like there's a lot of, I don't know if I want to say dark forces, but it seems like there's a lot of politics going on behind the scenes that's making things A, a bit ugly, and B, doesn't maybe seem to have as much to do about getting me to Formula One as I'd hoped.
Well, yeah, you know, I think pretty much after that year in 2014, there's a lot of things that changed. You know, I kind of also took my management in my hands a bit more, because, you know, before that it was always other people kind of making all the decisions around me and not having me involved. And, you know, I think it was just a big process to kind of grow up as well a little bit and, you know, make your own decisions. And, yeah, it was definitely, I think it was just a hard time, you know, because you, yeah, like I said before, you know, until then, anything I drove, it was just to achieve that goal. And then all of a sudden, it's not really happening because it's of something that you're not really controlling. And it's it was definitely, I think, a pretty hard, like, big heartbreak for me to, yeah, kind of come back from that. Because, yeah, it was a bit frustrating. Things didn't go the way, yeah, I was expecting to. And there was just a lot of things going on that, yeah. And when you look at it after that, you know, maybe you shouldn't even have done that move. But, you know, hindsight is always better, right?
My vision is best looking backwards, Simona. Another thing that comes to mind, throughout most of your career over here, maybe barring the couple of times that you drove for Andretti in IndyCar, you were often in a one-car team or a smaller team. How have things been different for you on a professional level, either what you have learned or added, or just changes that you've seen being a part of the Kelly program, knowing that it's multiple cars, a big operation? It really does seem to me that, you know, even this far into your career, it's really the first time you've had consistency and stability in a big team. What's that been like, and how has that been different for you?
Yeah, it is quite different. And like you said, I've pretty much most of my career I've always, yeah, been kind of only me. And yeah, I think there's always pros and cons. You know, if you're the only car, it's just everything is really evolving around you. And I think when I was driving in IndyCars, I just had a lot of confidence in my driving from the results I had in Atlantics, for example. You know, I knew I was quick, and I think that was helping in the sense, you know, I could maybe direct a bit what I wanted in the car. I was working with an engineer as well that I knew from before, and I think that's how we got the results as well in 2013, because we really focused on what I needed in that. Then in a bigger team, the good thing is because there's more cars, there's just more stuff available to you. So you need to, it makes your life a little bit easier in the sense that it's just more information, but it also can get a bit confusing sometimes because you, sometimes you need something that is better for you, and your teammate is a bit quicker and you trying maybe what he's doing and it just doesn't work for you. So it can get a bit confusing as well.
I guess another a friend from down under said whenever he walks past your supercars garage, it seems like you're always in conversation with the great Mark Scaife, and was wondering if the two of you have become good pals, or if he's kind of a mentor, you know, obviously a V8 legend, but just curious. I mean, he's the coolest guy in the world, but you guys struck up a friendship?
Yeah, no, you have to, you know, him and Murph actually are really, you know, because they just know how to drive these cars. And I'll tell you, anybody who has driven a V8 supercar, it's just, it doesn't really make any sense when you're driving them, how to be fast. So it was funny because the first time I went to New Zealand, I was talking, yeah, I wasn't really great through the last corner. And then, Murph came to me and he's like, oh, why don't you try that? Which was like something really small, but it changed my life. So yeah, you kind of have to pick their brain a little bit and ask them what they think. And it's kind of funny as well, because you know they've driven the cars a while ago, but it seems like the things that they were doing are still working nowadays. So it's quite cool.
And what are some of the driver, I guess, camaraderies maybe you've developed in supercars? It always seems like someone's upset at someone over something as well. So tell me about just culture in the paddock and also among your fellow drivers. Have you built some good friendships there? And you got any good rivalries you want to share with us?
Well, no, I don't really have that many rivalries, but I think everybody's really cool in the paddock. You know, the biggest difference as well is pretty much when I got in there, there was it was just me and one other rookie, and it just shows, you know, that the guys who are racing there have been there forever, and there's just a really solid group in that. It's quite fun, and it's a little bit different. You know, the racing is different. There's definitely, I think, the biggest change between an IndyCar and this is that, you know, you can push and shove, and usually there's always payback as well, so that always kind of comes back in supercars. So it makes it pretty tough out there, because if you rub a little bit with someone, you know, the next race it might come back. So you always have a bit of a second thought sometimes.
Equal opportunity. I love that. You know,
the
other thing too on this really kind of fun but weird CV you've built is after IndyCar.
It is pretty weird, huh?
No, it
There's
is.
There's a lot of different things
it
going
is,
on.
It is, but you know, we embrace you. After IndyCar, we have your Formula One preparations. We also have some Formula E in there as well. And I have to admit, when I heard that you're going to be doing some Formula E with the Andretti team, I'm like, okay, cool, but I don't know. I just think, driving style-wise, the fact that you like to get your elbows out, and I just didn't think your driving personality fit those cars, but I could be totally wrong. What did you think about your experiences in Formula E?
Yeah, well, it was interesting in the sense, you know, I was really trying hard to get back into IndyCar, kind of got to three races with Michael and the Andretti team, and then that didn't pan out, you know, for the same old reasons. But then out of this, actually, this Formula E deal kind of came out, and to be honest, yeah, it was definitely something new. I wasn't really sure about it, because, you know, in my head I was like, oh no, I really want to get back to IndyCar, that's what I want to do. So it was a bit of a big thing in my mind, a bit, you know, in my head, to kind of get around and then just, you know, really focus on that. I think it took a little bit too much time, and it was a bit maybe it was a bit my fault, you know, just to get frustrated with that idea that, okay, now, you know, the F1 thing didn't work, now the IndyCar thing doesn't work, like, what's going on? And it's just frustrating. And in the Formula E, it was I think, to be honest, I think the racing is quite different, but I think it has different challenges to it. And the only, I think, really unfortunate part that we had in that year is that it was year two, and the engine that they had developed wasn't working, so we had to revert to season one engine, or powertrain. So we kind of, it was a bit like, okay, it's not going to be a great year, and it was a bit tough in a sense, but we did manage some points, and you know, had a few races where we could have had some more points. But I think in all, I think in general for the team, it wasn't a really good year, and it was a bit difficult baptism to go into Formula E.
I had another friend ask, this is back in the day when Sebastian Vettel was very well known for naming all of his cars. You had your very famous IndyCar chassis, Pork Chop, and
yes.
Had a friend ask if you just still have any fond memories of that car you might be able to share, and if you've continued naming cars.
Well, I do think about Pork Chop like a lot, because I thought it was quite cool. But pretty much after that year, because the year wasn't great, having that big crash and all that, the naming of the cars kind of went away. Maybe I'm a bit superstitious or something like that, but it didn't stick around, unfortunately.
Well, I know we've got to get you going here in just a little bit, but a couple final questions, I guess, that come to mind. So we're going to have you over here in January for the Rolex 24 at Daytona. This Acura NSX GT3 car is going to be something new for you to drive, even though you're obviously in a tin top down under, but a very different type of machine. What are the next, heck, you're going to be testing that car. You're going to be at the Roar before the 24 in 2 months, essentially. What do those next 2 months look like for you, trying to either get ready for Daytona while also being in the midst of a Supercars championship?
So I have my last race in Supercars in 2 weeks, so I'm in Switzerland actually right now, so I'll be flying down there to finish in Newcastle, and I'm looking forward to that one because we were really quick there last year, so I think it's going to be fun. And then December is pretty much kind of off. It's going to be the only time I really get off, so I'll be preparing really for Daytona, spending some time at home as well in Switzerland, just with my friends and family, like you said, the test is going to be pretty early in January, so I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be a car again with a little bit more wing, which I like, so should be okay.
And you're also going to have the specter of proper endurance racing, in the sense that you're going to be doing multiple stints, you know, multiple hours behind the wheel. Is that going to require anything different or additive to your training regimen compared to what you do these days for the V8 Supercars?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be maybe a little bit different preparation. You know, I think I'm not a morning person, so I hope I don't get the weirdest stint.
Michael Shank, if you're listening, get your stint order straight.
You know, I'm not sure about the 3 a.m. stint, but no, I think if it happens, it'll be fine. But yeah, you know, I think endurance racing, I have not really that much experience in it. We do have, you know, Bathurst, which is a 6-hour race. That was kind of the first time, you know, I got to share a car and stuff like that. And I think, you know, we're going to be four drivers sharing the car, so that's going to be interesting. But the good thing, you know, is that Kat has a lot of experience in the car, so I think we can really lean on her a bit, especially at the test, just to quite understand. And you know, at the end of the day, we're all professionals, so I look forward to just kind of get on with it. And I think the training, you know, is... I don't know about the night racing, to be honest. I've never done it, so that'd be interesting to do when we're testing, for sure. But you know, if any other people can do it, I think I can do it as well. You know?
Oh yeah. Well, we're gonna find out whether you like it or whether this is a one-off for you real quickly. But I guess that's the other, maybe the last question that comes to mind, Sim, is we have had the crazy Shane Van Gisbergen, and he's been coming over for a number of years now, doing some of the IMSA endurance races and such, as he's able to fit them in between V8 responsibilities. Obviously, Craig Lowndes, I know Lowndes, he wants to start adding some in. Jamie Wincup was supposed to do the Monterey IMSA round here in September, but that got canceled. But if you had the opportunity with Meyershank Racing or someone else, would you be up for adding in some IMSA stuff between V8 opportunities, or do you think the V8 calendar is too hectic to do both?
I want to do more races in IMSA and all that, but schedule-wise, I think it might be a little bit difficult. But you know, I think there's one or two races that could be a possibility. So. We'll see. You know, we'll take Daytona first and see how it goes, and then plan a little bit further up if there's more possibilities. But for sure, I'd be interested to do more races. You know, I wouldn't have said yes if that wasn't the case. You know, I like driving cars, so any opportunity there is to do it, it's good.
Well, you're also going to get to drive for somebody, probably your first team owner, with a full sleeve of tattoos on his arm and all kinds of crazy fun. So the Shank team, they know how to get down. They know how to have a good time. So I think you're going to fit right in.
Yeah, no, looking forward to it for sure.
Well, Sim, thanks for spending some time, pal. And I'll look forward to seeing you in person again for the first time in a few too many years. But look forward to seeing you here in a couple months when you get to come over and play in America.
Sounds good.
And that was our pal Simona Di Silvestro. Of the many things I appreciate about her, it's that despite intense pressure, despite being one of the best women in motor racing, period, and having been at that status for many, many years now, she's still very human, very natural. We look at some other folks who are under constant pressure, and constant criticism as well in motor racing, and they tend to compress. Their personalities tend to get hidden behind thicker and thicker barriers. We've seen that over here in the U.S., but it's just really cool to see that despite her time on many domestic and international stages, Simona still just shines through, and again, just a genuine, genuine person, and I think that's one of the reasons that so many folks have a great affinity for her and her work. Also keep in mind that when she was here in IndyCar, while IndyCar was popular, it was also a distant number two to NASCAR in terms of popularity. And if we think about her work today in the Australian Supercar Series, that is Australia's not only number one form of motor racing, but essentially the only major. So just the level of interest, the level of headlines and spotlight, I would say far more intense than just about anything she's ever done. And yet, despite the challenges, despite the heavy negativity that has come her way from some fans, you heard, she's still herself and just trying to do more, do better, and achieve the same goals she has always gone after. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.